You're listening to Popstar Conversations, taking you inside with your favourite musical artists.
Today, Chuck and I are sitting here with the iconic Donna Summer. Donna, thanks for joining us.
Donna, welcome to the show. What was your inspiration for this record?
I don't know. I think that it's what I do. I write music, and it's what I do for a living. So aside from earning money from it, it's what I love. And I hope to grow up in my writing. So the better I write, the more I write, you know, the more I write with different people, the more I learn, the more I investigate music and understand about the writing process, hopefully the better my songs will get. And the more I will be able to chronicle the human condition. And so I, you know, that's my goal, is to become great at what I do. Having started with no musical background, I have a lot of catching up to do.
Did you intend on putting out a record at this time?
Actually, this came about without me. I had nothing to do with it. I wasn't looking to make a record right now. I was looking to do my musical. And I was going to VH1 to talk to them about doing a co-production with me on the musical. And they wanted to talk to me about doing the Diva special that they just did, the one that already happened with all the women. And I wasn't excited to do that, to tell you the truth. It's just not what I do. If I would do it, I would do it differently. I would want to know the people. I would want to have a time to be with them so there was a sense of bondedness and relationship, so that when we could sing each other's songs, and I would like to do it with someone whose songs really meant something to me, you know, and I think that you get a different kind of show. So for me, just to go and sing with a bunch of other people singing on that level wasn't that exciting. But they got wonderful ratings on television, and it was a very big success for them. And I think that I'm very excited for them that they did it. I don't think I would have felt out of place. You know, I don't think I would have felt, it's not me to do that kind of stuff. I generally don't do those type of things. I just try to be myself and do what I do, and I'm not trying to be in competition to anyone but me.
And you never did put out a gospel record.
I've never recorded a gospel record in my life. I recorded some inspirational songs that were like I Believe in Jesus, that were on my pop records, but they weren't gospel records in the traditional sense. They were pop records that, you know, were talking about specific things. But I don't, you know, I've never really recorded a gospel album ever. Not that I would love to, but I haven't. And for some reason, people think that I did because of my Christian beliefs, but I never had a deal to make a Christian record.
So maybe in the future.
I'd love to do a gospel record at some point. I would think it would be wonderful. I've written gospel songs, and I've written some wonderful gospel songs, and so hasn't my husband, Bruce Sudano. And I always try to incorporate a gospel song in the show, just because I think that when I'm performing, it's important for me to show people my whole self. And as much as I can, not just the fun part and the sad part, but like all aspects. I think a person is a total person, and I like to try to share every part of what makes me me. And I think that's important. That's important to me. So when they leave, they have an overall sense of who I am, and not a one-sided image of what they think I am. So I try to be as honest as I can about who I am when I'm on stage.
Your song, Gotta Be Rich, it's a very honest song.
Yeah, well, I think it's truthful. If you get a list of the words, you'll see how truthful it is. It's extremely, just tell it like it is. I mean, it's really difficult. When I first came to the United States back from Germany, I had a very difficult time because I was used to going to the store in Munich and picking up my little Brötchen in the morning and, you know, just enough for today and tomorrow. I pick up more tomorrow. In America, they shop bulk. Everything is a lot. And so when they do anything, it's too much. Everything's too much. And so it was an adjustment for me to go from just dealing with right now to dealing with so much stuff. And when I came to America, they just took over my whole life, you know, and I didn't think that I was looking to become rich. I was always looking to be good at what I do. And I think that maybe if you're good at what you do, you become successful. But I didn't do it for the sake of the success. I did it because I like to do what I do. And if I become successful because of doing what I do well, great. If I only ever just do what I do and love it, that's great too. Because I love it. So I enjoy it. If it's 50 people, if it's 2 million people, I will have a good time.
I gotta tell you, you survived the music business in a very positive way.
I had a very unique experience that most people, that actually, in a lot of ways, a lot of people got to watch happen. They got to watch me happen. You know, they saw me when I came to America. They saw the whole process. And, you know, there have been a lot of books in the past few years written about that period of time because it was so, you know, in the public at that point. But I think that I've survived that well. I'm not, my criticisms are not malicious criticisms. They're merely observations. And they're merely me depicting the moment or talking about what actually happened in the most true and honest sense, not making up a story to go with it. It's just the way it was. Not just for me, but for the people that were there. And so I think that anybody looking on or hearing that particular song, Gotta Be Rich, knows that, you know, in LA, when you hit LA, if you're poor, the first thing you think about is, I gotta get some money. I gotta figure out how to get a job, how to get ahead.
Did you ever find yourself becoming part of the Hollywood lifestyle?
When I first got to California, you had to go to the right parties, you had to be seen at the right places, you had to be photographed with the right people, you had to be wearing the right clothes, you had to live in the right neighborhood, drive the right car, and be in the right place. Eat at the right places for lunch, you had to go to the right doctors, everything had to be the right thing. And learning what the right thing is from the wrong thing takes time. But if you have somebody there that knows, they just put you in it, and all of a sudden you're just in the right place.
At what point did you realize that it just wasn't for you?
Right away. Because I, after about 2 months in America, I felt like I didn't know who I was. Somebody woke me up in the morning. They told me, they called me every hour on the hour until I appeared at the office. I mean, it got to a place where I literally could not almost remember my name. Where I became, you see, when you leave one culture, when you go to another culture, that you very often go through something that they call a culture shock. And when I came back to America, I subconsciously was going through a culture shock because America, as I remembered it, had changed dramatically in the 8 years that I'd lived in, or the 7 years at that point that I'd lived in Munich or lived in Germany, in Europe. And so, I mean, the Vietnam War had happened, Nixon had happened, a ton of things had happened at that point, and just America had changed. And so by the time I got there, I was at the end of all that change. And so all the stuff that went on before that in America, I had no knowledge of. I was like a stranger, you know, and I was very out of place. People would talk to me about things. I didn't know what they were talking about. And they were looking at me like I was a lunatic. And then I'd lapse into speaking German to them because I was accustomed to just speaking in German and I didn't hear myself speaking English. So I would be speaking in English and start speaking in German and not be able to tell the difference. And I couldn't tell I was speaking in German. So it was a very frustrating time for me because people from their perspective thought I was being pretentious or you know, acting funny. And I was just trying to get along. I wasn't. There was absolutely no pretense in it whatsoever. I was merely trying to adjust to this new environment. And I was terrified. I was really afraid. I did not know what I was doing. And so Neil Bogart and the people that were around me at the time just sort of taught me everything I needed to know. And I'm happy for them because I wouldn't have known. You know, they said, well, you gotta have this, you gotta drive this kind of car. This is how you look like you belong in Hollywood.
Donna, was that at the time of Casablanca Records?
Well, it was a very different time. I mean, one day I will write my own book about it, but I don't think it's going to happen real soon. I mean, I've written a certain amount about it just for my sake, for the sake of keeping it in my memory. But I would never release that information at this point. It's not necessary. But I have written a lot of information down because of the play, because of trying to get the parts from the musical that I need to, you know, enhance the musical.
Do you think you'll always be known as the Queen of Disco?
Tina Turner was very successful in her early years, she and Ike. But she went on to become Tina Turner. And you don't think about Ike anymore. You think about Tina. And the Diana Ross was with the Supremes. People had lives before the life they have now. Cher was with Sonny. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Bee Gees had another career before staying alive. They were a whole different, you know, had a whole different sound. And then they came out with Staying Alive. It was another life. And so I think that people create new lives for themselves because they have to fit into the moment. And when, you know, sometimes there's a period of time in between where you're writing and you're developing and it doesn't quite fit the moment. And then all of a sudden it fits the moment and it rolls for 2 or 3 years and then it settles down again.
Well, then, do you see this as a transitional period?
Yeah, I think that we all go into that. I think it's like I garden. I have plants and things a lot. And in the wintertime, you have to cut things back. And sometimes you have to cut them back a couple of years so the roots grow, and then they come up, and then it's like, whoa, look at this plant. Because we have to grow internally. Too many people put too much emphasis on the external. And a lot of kids that become successful are externally right, but they're internally, they're not mature. And that internal self is all you got to go on once you really are out there doing that. If you don't have the resources to carry the weight of the position, you're going to fall down.
Yeah, I agree.
Is doing a musical, is that another chapter for you?
I felt that the next step was the musical. It seems that divine providence, God, has decided that I was to do all this other stuff before this. I did not orchestrate this. So the way this came about, sort of by chance, I didn't fight it, but I wasn't looking for it. It just sort of came. And then I said, okay, don't resist this. Maybe this is something I'm supposed to do. I didn't feel like I was supposed to resist it. So I said, okay. And it sort of fell into place and the ball started rolling. And then, you know, VH1 and then the record company and then whatever, all these things just sort of came together in a very short period of time, which is really, in real life, very difficult to do. I mean, I had a deal I was working on for 7-8 months and it still wasn't signed. And so when you find that something comes together that quickly, you know, all these different elements, VH1, you know, Sony Epic, Behind the Music, all these different things come inside of like a 2 month period or 3 month period. They just coagulate and it's there. And it's like, oh, you can't make it happen. It's almost impossible to just make something like that happen. I don't try to make those things happen. I want to be in the right time. So I think that the fact that they happened just shows me that I'm on the right course. And now I will try to develop the play as it's supposed to come, when it's supposed to come. And because we've been working on this play for at least for 3 years, I've worked on it for 7, you know, myself. The first song, My Life, was written in England at least 7 years ago.
Do you think that there is an expectation from the fans for you to explore new creative avenues?
You know, Frank Sinatra is just Frank Sinatra. It's not, he doesn't have to go out and be himself. He's there. He's part of Americana. I'm already part of Americana. I'm not saying that I am. I am. I mean, it's just a fact. I mean, I'm not saying that to be, you know, make myself big or small. You know what I'm saying? It's like, you know, Madonna is a part of pop culture. It's just a fact. Michael Jackson's. There are things that are part of pop culture that just are. So I'm not trying to make myself at this point. I'm sustaining and I'm growing in the process. And when the time is right and it evolves to the right cycle, you know, whatever happens will happen. I mean, I want to write musicals. That's something I feel very inclined to do. So I don't want to be on the road forever because I have a lot of stuff in me that needs to come out that I need to express. So I need to be home and I need to be writing and writing with different people to get this creativity down. I think there's a lot of great songs in me. I just haven't written yet. I do believe that. And I think that they have to come out. So, you know, it's not only about just performing or just doing records. It's about the whole of who I am as a person. I mean, who knew that Cher would ever, you know, be an actress on this level? Who knew, you know, any number of things? But if you don't let people at least try, you don't know what you're missing until they do. So I think I have to try this.
So you have nothing to prove.
Nothing to prove. Just keep doing what you do.
Don, I have to ask you, your first big hit was Love to Love You, Baby. How did your parents react to that?
I was a Christian, and at the time, I mean, I've always been a Christian, but I mean, I was a little out of the church at that point. But, you know, never, I would not have sung that song. That song was sung because I was doing a demo with Georgia and Pete, and we were going to get another girl to sing that song. I was just singing the oohs and ahs because I didn't have any words. And I'm like, whatever. And I just thought, okay, well, they'll get somebody to finish writing the song or whatever. And then they didn't. And I didn't even know about it for several months. I had no idea they did. I had no idea they ever played that record to anyone until I went on a trip in the Mediterranean. And when I came back, that song was given to somebody, Neil Bogart in America. I had flowers at my door. They were dead. I come to my apartment and there's telegrams under my door. I'm like, what is going on here? What are all these flowers? What's this? And when I read the telegraph, I'm like, I didn't even know the song, anybody had ever heard the song. So I was completely baffled. And then they had taken the record over there. It wasn't out yet, but I didn't have a signed contract with Giorgio Moroder when that record was released.
But the song, it didn't represent who you are.
I wrote the song with Giorgio, but I was writing it. I wasn't writing the song. I was sort of inflecting the song. I was giving the idea of a sensuous kind of song, love song, but I didn't have the words. So I just, you know, like soft, giving the feeling of what the song should be as opposed to necessarily the song itself. And they liked the feeling so much that they didn't want to change the feeling, you know? And so, you know, the rest is history. But then when they released it and it came out and then they made it 18 minutes long or whatever, the length of the 17 something minutes long, it just took off. It was out of my control.
You were quite young at the time, and weren't you married to an Austrian?
Yeah, my first husband was Austrian, and he and I started off, and we did musicals together, and, you know, then I had my daughter Mimi, and he left. He was working all the time. I was alone a lot. I was alone most of the time. Even when he was home, he was mostly sleeping. He worked in a club in Munich, and at some point, I mean, I was just too young to be there, to do that. I wasn't ready. I didn't want to be married. I didn't want to be married in the first place. And so the situation was that not wanting to be married in the first place and then finding yourself tied to this situation and you're thinking, if I don't change this now, I'm going to die in this situation. I will not survive this. You know, I didn't see myself living out that existence. I felt that it was not what I could live with for the rest of my life. And I loved my first husband a lot. He's a great guy. But there were other factors that were involved and different things that happened, which you can read about in the musical.
But you changed your name, didn't you?
Well, I changed it because they had already used that name for my records. So I didn't want to change it and confuse the audience, but so I changed the O to a U. It was summer. So that was the change.
Let me ask you something. Do you identify with the stage character Donna Summer?
No, I think in the beginning she was. She was a creation. But I think that, I think now Donna Summer is me, is who I have become. Well, let's put it like this. Donna Summer has become who I am. I took her over. You know, before she took me over, and now I've taken her over, so now I only use her when I need her. But, you know, my family doesn't call me by that name. They call me by another name. And part of that is to create the distance between the person that I am there and the person that I am intimately with people. Because, you know, it's hard. And even with my friends, I like them to call me a certain name that isn't that name, One, because it lets them feel like they're equal, and it doesn't make me always feel like I'm that other person. And I think for them, like, I have relationships with people that I've met in real life, but I have more phone relationships with them. I talk to them on the phone. And it's easier for them to be with me on the phone, and we get to know each other very well, so that when we finally do meet each other or see each other, they know me. They don't have to look and think, oh, that's so-and-so that they see on television or that they see in the newspapers or that, you know, it's difficult.
Donna, how did it feel when you reached the status of being known as a diva?
No, I don't. It's not that I mind the term. It's like, I think today they call everybody a diva. And a diva isn't necessarily what they call a diva today. I think the original word diva came from Maria Callas, who was a diva. I mean, it was there before, but she really kind of took that name. And, you know, when you see these, it was really created in the opera world, I think. And it really, it wasn't necessarily the most positive meaning, but it was someone who had great talent, great command of people's attention and energy, and that were also very, you know, commanding in their person and demanding.
Donna, this has been an incredible pleasure. Thank you again for coming on the show.
Donna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you again for listening to Popstar Conversations. Be sure to click the subscribe button below and hit the red bell so that you'll be notified of our next exclusive interview.
Thank you for listening to Popstar Conversations. Please join us again for another conversation with your favorite musical artist.